Hello and welcome to Pardes from Jerusalem, the podcast series from the Pardes Institute of Jewish Studies in Jerusalem. I'm Larry Kluger, a Pardes alum. This week, Yitro. This week, Rabbi Howard Marcos discusses Yitro. Rabbi Howard Marcos is a member of the Pardes faculty. And now, Rabbi Howard Marcos.
Thank you, Larry. There's a widespread belief in Judaism that every Jew in every generation was present at Mount Sinai to behold the revelation from God in the form of the Torah, a microcosm of which is the Decalogue, read in synagogues all over the world this Shabbat, during which the listening congregation stands at attention, reenacting in a way the miraculous event. But can you imagine how overwhelming it must have been for the children of Israel who were first in line to receive God's treasure? After all, the myriads of Bnei Yisrael were simply a freed mob of ignorant slaves, not altogether prepared to listen to the revelation with its thunder and lightning and blasts of the shofar. In fact, we are told in the Torah portion, Parshat Yitro, that the trembling Israelites even had to plead with their fearless leader Moshe, Daber ata imanu v'nishma'a, Ve'al yedaber imanu Elohim pen namut. You speak with us, Moshe, and we will listen. But let not God speak to us, lest we die. So my question for you today in this podcast regarding this awesome experience is, to what basic needs of the children of Israel was this presentation of the Ten Commandments, or the entire Torah, according to some theologians, to what basic needs was this revelation directed? Was the voice of God at Mount Sinai a teaching voice, conveying the rudiments of knowledge necessary for a person who desires to live successfully within the framework of the learned mitzvot? Or was the revelation meant to address the will of the people, their emotional embracing of the concept of Kabbalat Ol Mitzvot, the acceptance of the notion that each Jew is obliged to surrender to God and observe all of his commandments, regardless of whether we actually know what they are? In other words, for what was the revelation intended? To provide facts or to stimulate feelings? While it is likely that there are theological ideas surrounding the theophany that took place on Mount Sinai, I would like to share with you two fundamentally different philosophies regarding the Torah revelation. One position suggests that knowing is the most important achievement for which a human being must strive. The Greeks often referred to the motto, Gnothisioton, know thyself, implying that if we know who we are, as well as the facts that are available to us to internalize, that alone is enough information for a human being to guarantee proper decision-making and proper behavior. There's certainly a part of our Jewish tradition that agrees with this approach. In Pirkei Avot, Ethics of Our Fathers, for example, we are warned, Lo am ha'aretz chasid, the ignorant cannot be pious. Elsewhere in the Mishnah, we are reminded, Talmud Torah keneged kulam, the study of Torah is equivalent to all of the other mitzvot, based on the premise that God's will cannot be fulfilled unless we know and obey the commandments contained in the Torah, the ultimate guide to action and behavior. This philosophy has given the realm of science great prominence in our time. If people know enough about the world, posits this theory, the likelihood is that we will live sensibly, be kind, and succeed in creating a working ecosystem. This begs the question, however, of why there is still evil, intolerance, and suffering in this world, which is anything but paradise. Perhaps knowledge is not enough. Creating and maintaining our world relies upon proper transmission and subsequent reception of the available material. This is true. And while in earlier generations one might have been able to blame the lack of communication on distance, the inferior quality of communication devices, slowness of transfer, and so on, in our time there are no excuses for the inability to get the message to the desired destination. And yet, there is still evil, corruption, murder, cheating, and so many other transgressions that continue to be rampant in this world, in spite of the information glut and accessibility and speed through which we are able to accumulate knowledge. So maybe we have to come to the realization that not all of those who know are able to communicate, and that those who do not know might be just incapable of receiving the transmissions, and the fact that the plethora of knowledge that is out there does not necessarily provide us with the recipe for happiness and contentment. Allow me to illustrate this idea with a cute story. A woman was meeting with her divorce attorney for the first time. The lawyer had asked her client a number of preliminary questions. "Do you have grounds for a divorce, madam?" she asked. "Grounds? Why, yes, we have about 2 acres that will need to be divided equally between us." "Do you have a grudge of any sort?" "Sure," she said. "Both my husband and I put our cars in it. It's connected to the house." "Do you recall there being violence in the home?" "Why, my son has a drum set, but that's the only musical instrument I can think of." "And why, may I ask, do you say that you want this divorce?" "Well, you see, we have this problem. We can't seem to communicate with one another." Speaking of the challenge of communication in our day, here's another illustration of how our advancements in transmission in the last generation are not necessarily only perfect and only positive. A psychiatrist called his office to tell his secretary that he would not be able to make his 3 o'clock appointment. "No problem," his secretary responded. "I'll set up a tape recorder, and the patient will be able to provide his free association, which will be recorded." Well, it turns out that the patient who was supposed to be at that 3 o'clock appointment was unable to be there. But he called the office to say that he's sending over a recording of 50 minutes of material that he planned to share with the doctor that afternoon. So the 3 o'clock session took place with no one in the office, and everyone is happy. Or are they really happy? Judaism agrees that communication of knowledge is of paramount importance if the religion is to survive in future generations. This is why we have not only a Torah, but so many other books which are accessible to every single one of us. And not only do we have texts, but we have commentary on those texts and commentary on the commentary, in case we need to gain an even greater understanding of the knowledge that is being shared with us. There exists another approach to the world, however, which declares that it is will, not knowledge, that is the most important element for transmitting the best message of Torah and mitzvot to future generations. Please recall that at the time of the revelation, our Torah reports, "Vaya'anu kol ha'am yachdav, vayomru kol asher diber Adonai na'aseh." All the people answered as one, saying, "All that the Lord has spoken, we will do." In fact, this declaration is repeated twice more, once echoing the verse I just quoted, and the other, found in next week's Torah portion, finally brings in the intellectual component to this promise to exercise our will to obey. In Shemot, Exodus 24, verse 7, we read, "Vayikach sefer habrit, vayikra beozne ha'am, vayomru kol asher diber Adonai na'aseh v'nishma." Then Moses took the record of the covenant and read it out loud to the people. And they said, all that the Lord has spoken, we will act and we will listen to what is being communicated." This declaration seemed counterintuitive to Rav Saadia Gaon, who lived in what today is Iraq in the 10th century of the Common Era. His terse comment to the verse which concludes Na'aseh v'nishma is Nishma'enu v'na'asenu. We will learn the mitzvot and we will do them, leaving the reader with the impression that first we must know, then we will do. The text itself, however, has these two declarations reversed, And I contend that calling out our will to obey prior to the commitment to the accumulation of knowledge is purposeful. It is the desire, the will to act, that is the critical takeaway from the experience on Mount Sinai. In discussions about our Judaism in general, we make use of many references to God's will, Be'ezrat Hashem, to willpower, Yetzer HaTov, goodwill, Ratzon HaTov, and free will, Bechira Chofshit. There seems to be a basic motivation towards positive behavior and acceptance that seems to place the learning second, making the desire to act come before internalizing the available information. Dieters know about the importance of willpower. The same is true for alcoholics, gamblers, and any of us who realize the importance of acting or refraining from acting on our desires and goals, our passions and dreams. In Sefer Bereshit, we read how God created human beings, Bitzalmenu Kidmutenu. God says, in our image, after our likeness. The rabbis suggest that this refers not to the physical image of God, but rather to his ability to exercise free will, a gift that we human beings have managed to embrace, for better and for worse, over the millennia. So there is knowledge, and there is free will. Might we conclude, then, that knowledge and communication, which have become so advanced recently, is not sufficient to nurture the human soul? If it were, then the facts, the data, the manner of bringing that information to the world, and the incredible accessibility to all of that material should mean a reduction in hatred, in insults, in the murder rate in the world, and would just make the world a better place. Instead, it seems that we are going in the opposite direction, gathering information about people in order to cheat them, hurt them, and as a result bring greater damage to the universe. There seems to be a significant increase in war, starvation, rape, robbery, and suffering than ever before in history. Maybe it's not that there is more, but we're hearing about it more because of the method of communication that has been embraced in our day. So allow me, please, to ask the question one more time. What was the revelation on Mount Sinai? There was thunder and lightning, the blast of the shofar and the voice of God. The people beheld it all. According to Rambam, Moses Maimonides, it was not information which was disseminated on Mount Sinai. That was up to the people to gather at their discretion, according to their capability. Knowledge, Rambam says, is not revealed, it is attained. What was revealed at Sinai was God's will, his desire, his wish for the children of Israel to embrace the relationship that he offered to the Jewish people by acting. And the people cried out, Na'aseh, we will do. They didn't say, Havinonu, we understand. Mind you, our religion is certainly not anti-knowledge. Rather, our experience on Mount Sinai suggests to us that knowledge is not enough. There must be a will which compels us to act, a will that mirrors that will of the divine, to move in a direction in which we are able to combine our desire to obey God with the intellectual motivation to understand the hows and whys of our faith. To bring these two passions together is to improve ourselves, our surroundings, and hopefully our world.
Thank you, Rabbi Marcos. Thanks for tuning in, and we'll see you on the next episode of Pardes from Jerusalem.